All right, hi, so my name's Andy Bissett.
I'm James Allen.
And this is the Ball Chat Sports Podcast.
Well, it's after watching about how many clips of South Park?
Probably too many. I think I'm a bit laughed out before.
Hour and 15 minutes, like, meant to be doing the podcast, and we ended up watching South Park clips. We're finally getting on to recording the pod.
The circle of the poo.
I'm warmed up.
Good way to start the podcast for the new year. First episode. And the last of you being here for in person. It's a bit sad, really, isn't it?
It is a bit sad, but...
Is your mum going to be cool with us recording in here next week?
Yeah, just you two. My mum's going to be on the podcast next week. She's going to be the host. The main host. But let's crack on with the preamble ramble. Then, obviously, we saw this a couple of days ago, and we thought we didn't really have a preamble ramble topic, so we thought that's got to go straight in. Yeah. So, what do you reckon, Jim Djokovic?
Well, click on the link for us, because I want to get... give a fair summation of the situation before we go, kind of like this thing kind of happened, kind of. But, and it's from the BBC, the bastion of truth. So they must be the most accurate source. So the row around Djokovic's entry into Australia is about his exemption that he received to play in the Australian Open. So the tournament organisers said the Serbian player, who has said he's opposed to the vaccination, boo. It's just dangerous, isn't it? Just dangerous, I think. He's been granted medical exemption by two independent medical panels organised by Tennis Australia, the body that runs the event, and Victoria State. So in Australia, they're under quite stringent COVID restrictions, aren't they? Mm-hmm. So basically, people are kicking off saying, why does he get to just say, I don't want one, because of his status and his fame and his position of power? And I thought we'd just open it up to the floor. I know what the company man's going to say. But I want to explore it anyway, because I imagine there's varying degrees. I'm the only non-vaccinated person in the room, so Bissett, what do you think?
Well, didn't you say that he's been signed off by two medical professionals that work for the WTA?
Event, yeah.
Or the males, ATP. What's the males? Is it ATP? The governing body of the males?
The old tennis lads.
I think the tennis lads.
I think they changed it last year.
Oh, come on.
For tax purposes.
We're for sports podcast.
Allegedly.
ABF's decision, that must be the Australian Board of Football.
Yeah, but you've got
fucking tennis.
But you've got to imagine that experts, quote unquote, supplied by the organisation aren't going to be the most impartial. You've got the world number one who needs to come to one of the Opens. They're going to say it's fine. It's fine.
Conspiracy, Jim. You would think that, though.
What happened then? Go on.
I don't know. He hasn't been let in.
What I was reading is that the Tennis Association, or whatever they're called there in Australia, were okay with it, that he'd given enough evidence to convince them. But then once he'd landed, the Border Force weren't happy with the evidence provided for their requirements to enter.
Is he going
to
be on the next episode of, like, the Australian Border Force? Have you seen those, like, Border Force shows?
Novak Djokovic trying to get into Australia.
Hello, mate. What you doing here, mate? I'm here for a tennis.
What's your purpose, mate?
But vaccines aside, or whether or not he was going to infect anyone, that aside, we talk about inequality a lot on this, don't we? We're always talking about elites getting their way, or the media treating Sterling different than they did the rest of his teammates who were white.
Yeah.
We talk about things like that all the time, and this is a big example of it for me, because Melbourne Australia's had very strict lockdowns over the last 2 years. Melbourne especially, you've had like these bubbles where you can't leave 5Ks outside of your bubble or something like that. So imagine if you've been living in a city like that for the last 2 years and then some really rich guy who's just good at tennis thinks he can just roll in and do what he wants. I'd be fuming, and I'd say that is a bit unjust.
Yeah, I would say it is unjust, but I also expect that special circumstantial exceptions are made for people in certain positions. And I know that's not fair. I completely agree with you, but that is the way things work. And he's a prominent tennis player, world number one. Like, they want him to play in the Open. I understand why Australians are kicking off. And I also think, like, good on him for not letting Djokovic in, really, for listening to the people, because you don't often hear that. I'm quite surprised by the outcome myself. I would expect it to go the other way and for them to, you know, give him special status. But they haven't, so I'm all right with it. I mean, the organisers of the Australian Open are going to be a bit screwing that, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, for sure, because he's going to be the tournament favourite that's not allowed into the tournament. And he's on that. He's just about to surpass, I think, is it Roger Federer's milestone of 20 Grand Slams? So he's on the same. I think they're both on 20. So he's looking for his 21st. So that's going to be a bit of a dent in his pursuit of the legacy of being the greatest tennis player of all time. And just to throw the cat in amongst the pigeons, the Daily Mail have said that he thinks he can, positivity can purify water, and like pyramids and like ancient aliens and shit. The Daily Mail are going along that route, and they quack. What are the absolute quacks they are.
What are the odds that Federer just put in a call to border control? Just like, mate, he's getting a bit close to me Swiss Alps right here, mate. Do you want to back up off me records? Do you know what I mean? I think, yeah, everyone else is cool. Is everyone else vaxxed up? Vax me up.
Throw away the key.
I ain't scared no jail. Is everyone else cool? Is everyone else on board? Because athletes are a bit of a weird one. Most of them are vaxxing up now, aren't they? So is Federer and all the lads, I'm assuming, because there hasn't been a big deal made about it. I've only heard about Djokovic.
Look, he can just go and play in a different tournament in a different country if he wants to stay that way. They've got strict rules there.
Definitely not in China, but if there's any Chinese events on the circuit, which I don't think there is anyway, but maybe on the women's circuit, but I don't think there is on the men's, is there? So
I don't know. I ain't got a clue.
I think they took away all the women's ones, didn't they?
Yeah,
is that possibly. Still going
on? Wait, I mean, boom. Now we'll have to see, because I think he's still going to play. When does the Australian Open start?
No, I'm pretty sure he's likely. Nah. His dad's saying he's like basically a prisoner. Like he's not allowed his phone and that. He's going to be deported.
But the border force said, no, he's got his phone.
Where's he based? Is he based in the US? Or is he based in Serbia?
I imagine he's got rather a few homes dotted around the globe. Wherever's best for tax purposes, I imagine that's where his legal domicile is. Two mentions of tax avoidance in the opening 5 minutes. There's got to be some sort of a record. Have any clue?
He's rubbing off on you, man.
I know, yeah.
you pulled out some company man vibes today. Yeah. I'm proud, man.
But so I'd say fair play. So what's the verdict? Well, each have a verdict. I think fair play to the Aussie government and the Aussie border force for not bowing into the pressure of an elite sports person who thinks he can just roll up and say, all right, here are my sort of like my doctored medical exemptions.
Allegedly.
And he hasn't come out and, you know, publicly said what the exemptions were for. And it does seem like he's very anti-vax.
He just doesn't want to get vaccinated.
Of course, that's it. So why didn't he just come out and be honest with it?
It's been hinted that he's, for his exemption, he said, I've had it recently, so I'm still immune and I'm not a danger to anyone. And I think the Tennis Association were cool with that, but the Border Force people didn't see enough evidence of that. That's what
it
I
just
read,
all but comes down to different levels of what people think is acceptable evidence, and everybody on the globe has got varying degrees of sort of like severity that they see, you know, how much could potentially harm their communities and their country. So I mean, even like Serie A, like for example, Chris Smalling, he said he wouldn't get vaxxed, he didn't want to get vaxxed, he didn't see the advantages in it. But he's got it now because Serie A said, like, basically, you ain't going to play. So you either don't get vaxxed and you don't play, or you get vaxxed and you can continue to earn your wage. Or, well, he probably would still earn his wage, but he wouldn't play and he'd probably lose his place. So I think there's a lot of countries that are taking that stance now. Don't agree with it. But the reason I got vaxxed is because I was pressured into it, or else I wouldn't get my green card. So I think there has been a lot of pressure from different sort of bodies that essentially made people forced into choices, which I don't agree with. I agree with the fact that people have their own choice and have their own mind, their own thinking. I think people should be allowed that, especially when you're an adult.
And also, that's fucking as well put, this is Jesus.
Really was.
I also think that Djokovic has the resources that would allow him more space from people in general. He can have his own hotel suite. He can have food brought up. He's got the resources to not be in and amongst the general public. So regardless of whether he's less of a threat because of his recent dose of COVID, he can actually isolate to a greater extent than most people can.
Yeah.
And he's not like basically what you're going to walk past people. And so I think the lines there are very...
It'd be a fair argument, but at the end of the day, rules are rules, and the Australian government want people to be vaxxed, don't they?
Yeah, fucking pussies.
I respect them for not letting him in, though. Like that. It's like, our people follow these rules, you need to too. And I thought that was quite cool. Look, if you go somewhere on holiday, you got to have at least a little bit of respect about what people do there.
Are you really English, mate? I don't think you are.
Yeah, are you sure? You ever been on an away day?
You've been up to Scunthorpe with the lads.
You've been on a Chelsea away day to Madrid? No holds barred there, mate.
Yeah.
Smashing up cafes and...
We run the place, mate. Don't worry about it. Planting the flag.
Right, let's move on to talking to Chelsea. Move on to the sports talk. There you go. Two big games in the title race. We'll start off with Chelsea versus Liverpool. Salah, Magic again, best player on the planet for me at the minute. Spirited far back from Tuchel's Chelsea. All the action was in the first half. What did you make of it?
Well, I went through the game on the day, and then I went through it again recently. And I think I would stop short of calling Salah magic for this particular performance, but we'll go through it now. So Sadio Mane set the tone with a Lex Luger forearm smash to Azpilicueta, which was 10 seconds into the game. Like, absolutely sick.
That's the old adage, isn't it? Like, yeah. Get into him nice and early, jump in, let him know you're there.
Yeah, they get a yellow card and it means you can't tackle for the rest of the game. Wicked idea.
Didn't people say that should be a red? Is that what you were saying earlier, Bissett?
I think Rio Ferdinand on the commentary was saying, like, yeah, it should have been a red. He's jumped up. Azpilicueta is probably about a foot smaller than him. He's jumped up, he's looking at the ball. At the end of the day, you need to raise your arms to, you know, generate that sort of like elevation. And he's tried to head the ball. It's just unfortunate.
I'll disagree there, you know. Mm. I think he led with his forearm. It wasn't a proper elbow Muay Thai vibe, but he had a look first and then jumped up with his arm like that. And it hit him like around the wrist area. It wouldn't have hurt him that much. Definite deserved yellow card for me. A red card would have been a bit strong, but that's the way football is now. I wouldn't have been surprised if he just whipped out the red straight away.
Yeah, if he went to VAR, wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
And it was a bit of a mad one for defenders in general. Like, so your boy Trent nearly gifted Chelsea a goal. I think who got in? Was it Pulisic that got in?
Yeah, and he should have finished it. He hasn't quite got that clinical sort of edge you need as a striker in the Premier League yet. He's still obviously very young. He's only been at Chelsea for, 18 months, something like that. But I think he will get there, but I think Mane showed, and there was another error from Trevor Chalobah on the other end where he's tried to head it, hasn't he? Yeah. When he could have just cleared it. And Mane's got into a very similar position, one-on-one with the keeper, where he's had to sort of divert the ball left to right of the keeper. Pulisic made a sort of mess of it. Whereas, like, Mane, he's like a seasoned vet when it comes to those situations. Yeah.
You'd back him in that situation. Yeah. And I got to give Kelleher a bit of credit for the Pulisic chance, because he was straight down there and he did everything he could to put Pulisic off. I'd agree with you that Pulisic is not on the same level striking-wise, but we'll examine that a little bit more later on. As you said, Chalobah, what was he thinking heading that down? That led to the first goal for Liverpool. But Trent, after his early hiccups, he redeemed himself for the second goal. Delicious, lifted ball over the top to Salah. Great take. I mean, Marcus Alonso, he's a passenger from that point on.
Yeah, but you, if you get a microscope out and look at what Salah did in those 3 seconds and you slow
it
down.
It was mad.
He's playing fucking physical chess with people, man, honestly. Yeah. Like, his first touch was immaculate. Like, he trapped the ball, which was had a lot of spin on it. It was coming down at sort of like, you know, a sort of quite a high angle. To take that first touch to put it into his path, and then he's done the sort of little deviation, dropped his shoulder a little bit with the left. And then he's just left Marcus Alonso for dead. And then he sort of gave Mendy the eyes and then finished with his left. Whereas you think he's going to probably bend it into the far corner. He's giving the eyes. Oh, it's just,
he lifted it over his left shoulder and Mendy was already going that way. And you could see Mendy, like, before the ball was even past him, he was like, fuck.
You know what? It's Messi. It's Messi-esque. He's the closest thing to Messi I've ever seen.
And he does that little stutter step where he knows what pace the ball's moving at, and he starts like stomping his feet, and the defenders are like, fuck, where's he going to go now? And oftentimes he just blasts past them, but they don't know, because they know he can cut inside. They know he can whip it in from 30 yards. They know he can finish up close. They know he can pick a pass, and they know he's got the speed and the close control to do anything around that. He's such a threat the whole 90 minutes. And once they went 2-0 up, you're thinking, at Stamford Bridge,
what's
as well.
What's this going to be? You're thinking, you know, what score is this going to be? Yeah. Is it going to be 5? Is it going to be, you know, 6-1, 5-0, something like that?
But Chelsea began the fight back with, it was one of the most awkward volley goals I've ever seen in my life. Like, Alonso,
it looked like a schoolboy sort of thing.
Yeah, Alonso's took a free kick. Keller's cleared it again. It's coming out to the edge of the box quite high. Then Kovacic has hit it. But the moment he kicks the ball, it's like he's trying to take flight. Like an ostrich, but he's not lifting up. And he had to, he looked like he was going to fall apart when he hit the ball. But fair play to him. Lovely looping volley. Kelleher was well beat, really.
It was like he'd processed the maths in his head and he wanted to get his body in the best position to create that arc. Like, the arc of the ball was perfect, but he didn't naturally sort of move on to the ball. It was a bit awkward, but in the day, great finish.
And the equaliser, the break came. Rudiger picked your boy Salah's pocket. It broke to Kante. He picked a lovely little outside of the right boot, round the corner. Then Pulisic gets in. I thought he showed great composure for the equaliser, really. Took a touch on his chest as the defenders are closing in. And it was more of like a guided half volley into the top right-hand corner. I thought that was really controlled, really nice. And I think Salah could have had a goal late on. Who else could have had a goal late on? Mane as well.
I think Keller had made a good save from, it might have been Pulisic again. Lukaku had one in the first half where he should have scored. That was the other night against Tottenham. That was against Davins. That was at Stamford Bridge the night last night.
Salah got one where it was quite far out and he saw.
Oh yeah, and saw Mendy. Mendy had a great save. Yeah, we watched that. That would have been unbelievable. That would have been one of the goals of the season, man.
So yeah, great game. Four goals. Home team 2-0 down. You got like sloppy defending, incredible attacking, wicked for us as fans. Even better for Man City. They're 10 points clear at the top and not looking like they're going to drop anything anytime soon. So,
and as they say, 65% of the land, 65% of the world covered. What is it? 65% of the world covered by land. The rest is covered by Kante.
Water.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
70% of the world is covered by water. The rest is covered by N'Golo Kante. That's one of those Chuck Norris vibes, isn't it? We got there in the end.
Oh, dear. But yeah, great game. And that was the sort of... That 2-2 looked great for Man City, and sort of they went into the game against Arsenal and it was like, right, if they get a win here, they're going to be what I think they are now, which is, I want to say, is it 10 points clear 10
points. I looked today, it's 10 points clear. And so, Liverpool have got a game in hand, but still 7 points.
We said last week they were only 6 points ahead and you were like, no one's catching them. So now they're 10.
Yeah.
I can't see Man City dropping 7 points over Liverpool.
But they were poor against Arsenal. And they still managed to bring out the 2-1 win in quite dramatic circumstances.
Yeah, I think it was a great first half from an Arsenal fan perspective. I think probably one of the best first half performances I've seen in a long time from Arsenal. I think fantastic in possession. They really pressured City on the ball, which is something that teams are quite scared to do. They're quite reluctant to do because Man City are the best team at sort of like building out and sort of playing out of pressure. But they were brilliant. And we spoke before about Tierney and the balance between him and Tomiyasu. Tierney being the sort of more attacking fullback on the left and Tomiyasu just creating that little bit of balance and sort of him pushing forward and him just sort of like tucking back and, you know, sort of tucking in just to create that little bit of defensive balance. And it was down that left that they got the goal, didn't they?
Yeah, down to Tierney to Saka, was it?
Yeah, I think Odegaard picked up a little bit of space. He was playing in between the lines quite well. And that was something that I think Gabriel did as well. He was sort of distributing the ball very quickly, I think the centre-backs were. So they were quite impressive.
So was this the first goal that Arsenal have had against Man City in 6 games? I think I heard that in the highlights.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Because 6 games they've not scored against them.
Arsenal have been... It's not right to call it unlucky. City have been smashing the life out of them for the past few seasons. It's like you come up to that game, especially when you're away, and you're like, this could be horrible for 90 minutes for sure. But it was a surprise, man. For me, I think on one hand it's encouraging because you see the difference between Arsenal last Saturday versus the Arsenal that got beat 5-0 against City earlier in the season. But I still think it's quite alarming that Arsenal can play as well as they did and still make mistakes in crucial departments that would ultimately end up costing them the game. Because City were at like 40% and they still managed to grab like a last-minute winner. Do you know what I mean? And that would be massive for their confidence going forward. They're like, we've been shit today. We've still beat them. Arsenal top 6.
Yeah, it's testament to how good City are. But and that was the second goal in the Premier League they conceded all season in the first half.
They're imperious.
Two goals. That is it. 2 goals in, 21 games? That's this incredible. Season in the Premier League, in the first half. That is absolutely incredible. But great finish. Obviously, Tierney, they created that overload, which was down to really, really good positional play. Created that overload on the left-hand side. Through ball came over. So it was sort of like a sort of nice weighted pass, wasn't it? And then obviously Saka was on the end to finish.
First time. And guided it in. A lot of lads would lose their head there. They want to smash the ball to pieces, end up losing their composure. Very impressive. He's still only like 19,
And Ramsdale, player that we said, oh, is he worth the money? His distribution looks unbelievable, man. He's looking like a really good keeper.
And Ramsdale is sick, man.
He's looking like a very, very good keeper.
He pulls off at least, I won't say every week, but every couple of weeks you see like an unbelievable save from him. And he might be just good enough to make up for some of the shortfall that Arsenal's defensive frailties bring into the game. You'd hope so anyway, definitely.
But 2 big VAR decisions in this game. Obviously, the first incident, and I've watched this back a couple of times since, it was the challenge from Edison on Martin Odegaard. In real time for me, I'm thinking that's a great tackle. I say great tackle. A keeper shouldn't be going to ground with his feet in the box anyway. It's just it's a very unusual thing to do. You should be going with your hands. You know what I mean? Go with your body. You've got a lot more chance of getting the ball and a lot less chance of making a poor challenge.
Yeah, is it a coward basically is what you're saying?
Yeah. And he's a bit of a cowboy, but on the slowdown replays, and this is the information and the sort of videography that VIR would have had to look at. It looks like he's gone through Odegaard's foot to me from certain angles. And this is the problem with VIR. It sounded great. All right, we're going to get video evidence where the referee can look at and he can, you know, sort of review his decision. But now it's got to the point where the referee didn't give the penalty, right?
Mm-hmm.
In that instance. No, this would be the second instance, so we'll forget about that for later. But I don't think he gave this one either. So both these instances, and he didn't give. But one of them was referred to VAR, and that's the one that got changed.
It's become
a situation where the people in the booth that are looking at the video, no matter what the referee does, whether he gives a penalty or doesn't give the penalty, they'll say, right, you need to go and have a look at this. And almost more often than not, it will get overturned, like whichever way it is.
That was a fucking penalty. Like it was a situation where,
you know, this first
the
one,
first one,
the first one, Odegaard, Edison, and Odegaard. Right, it's to the point where, okay, even if you don't think it's a penalty, the situation was such, and the speed of the game is such that it warrants a review, and that is simple as. And if you look at it, I don't think there's any dispute about it. He went through his foot.
It looked like he went through his left foot.
Yeah, but the rules that I checked were that it's if the ref considers it either careless or reckless or excessively forceful. And he didn't consider them.
I would say careless.
I don't know if it was careless.
I wouldn't call it reckless because that implies danger.
Yeah.
Definitely careless.
I don't know about careless. It didn't look. I watched it a few times and I didn't think it was too
careless.
Well,
that's fair. And this is what we're seeing now is the rationale playing out, the wiggle room that they give themselves in the wording of this law, because it basically puts them beyond legitimate criticism.
Mm-hmm.
God, I didn't say that. I didn't think he was being careless. I didn't think he was being reckless. These are all...
Well, they use the terminology clear and obvious. If the referee's made a clear and obvious mistake, who's it clear and obvious to? Do you know what I mean? Because clear and obvious to you could be completely different to what clear and obvious is to me.
Well, that's where they lean on their training and their reputations as referees and their experience. And you do have to take that into account. You really do, because
you gotta.
Referees are going to see things that even us on TV aren't going to see, even with like 100 replays. And you have to take into consideration the context of the game in person, in real time.
I don't think a referee should ever think about the context of the game. It should be looked at in its binary form. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like that challenge, no matter what happens in the 91st minute or the
context
first minute.
That.
It should just be what has happened. Look at the evidence. Do you know what I mean? It should be looked at fundamentally. Do you know what I mean? Rather than the context of the game should never be taken into consideration.
Ideally, I agree with you, but I think that's absolutely impossible.
Yeah, I do think it's possible. It's very, very difficult. Unless they're a robot in it, because everyone's got emotion. Everyone can feel the emotion. In that game, at the Emirates, Arsenal 0-0 at that point, aren't they? I think it was 0-0 at that point. So it's a big game, and it's a huge game, so you can feel the pressure, blah, blah, blah. If that's in, say, the 92nd minute, Arsenal are like 1-1, and they're going for the title.
That would be different.
Would it have gone Arsenal's way? You know, it's you know.
We're speculating, but yeah. you can safely say referees aren't performing their duties in a vacuum.
I mean, going back to the context of the game thing, imagine if there was a blatant foul and he didn't give a penalty just before, and then there's a much more grey area foul, then he probably,
Has happened, and it will happen. Yeah.
I'm sure I've seen things like that.
It happens all the time.
He's like, I should have given that last one. I'm going to give this.
It happens all the time. You know? Definitely.
So it should be binary, but it's after.
Or I should have given a red. Context. I should have given a red in that situation. Now somebody's gone down softly in the box. I'll give the penalty because I should have given that.
Yeah,
whereas
exactly.
that shouldn't happen either. It shouldn't. As you say, each incident should be looked at individually.
Yeah. You heaped praise on Gabriel, and a lot of the commentators and the pundits were doing the same thing. Two yellows. The second one I thought was quite soft, but at the same time, I have to be critical of the Arsenal players in terms of their decision making yet again, because I feel like it relates to their mentality and not being able to hold their nerve in big games like this. Mm-hmm. So what did you make of it?
I mean, we'll go over the second incident first, because we didn't do the Bernardo Silva.
Non-penalty.
He went down very, very theatrically. Very theatrically. And I have got a soft spot for Arsenal, but I do like Man City as well. I like the way they play, and I like Pep Guardiola and what he's done there. But I'm completely unbiased when I go from these perspectives. He went down extremely theatrically. You could tell he dived. Anybody that watches the game knew that he dived after the contact. There was minimal contact. There was a little bit of tugging.
Was there any contact?
There was not enough to fell a grown man.
No, it's not about felling a man. It's about grabbing the shirt. That's what it was about.
But you're allowed to grab shirts though.
So every time,
you're not allowed to hold opponents. No, it doesn't specifically say in the rules anything about holding shirts.
There we go.
You're not allowed to hold an opponent. No.
So they haven't holding legislated.
Shirts can
Flynn,
fall under that.
If referee gives a penalty every time somebody holds somebody in the box, he'll be giving 20 penalties a game.
No, but it's if it's it impedes them from getting to where they were going to be holding the shirt.
He didn't impede him.
He pulled that shirt very, very hard.
I would say he did impede him, but it was not enough for me. I mean, I can visualise it now. So Granit Xhaka, he's got the wrong side of Xhaka, to be fair.
That was his mistake.
Because he's not a defender. He's not an out-and-out defender. I thought he did quite well when he dropped back there into centre-back after Gabriel got sent off, but he's not an out-and-out centre-back. You wouldn't put him as centre-back next game, would you?
Xhaka's a defensive shit show. If he did play that well, is an anomalous performance for him.
But
he's a liability, man.
I mean, I'll tell you what.
Legit. We've just rewatched the penalty incident between Bernardo Silva and Xhaka, and I will say I've got sympathy for the referee, because in real time it looks as if Xhaka has actually tripped him, like full on legit tripped him. If they gave it straight away there, I would have no complaints if we were just able to watch the replay. But the thing is, it went for review and they still gave it. So I don't see how you can give that, because in a slow motion replay, you can see that Xhaka doesn't actually trip him. There is the most minimal contact between their legs. He actually makes a massive effort to get his legs out of the way, at which point Bernardo Silva's already heading towards the deck. The grip on his shirt that Xhaka has is inconsequential at that point. It doesn't affect his movement at all.
You're shaking your head, but the man that's qualified to be on that field, right? He told Bernardo Silva to get up. Because he could quite clearly see that he was play-acting.
When he saw it in real time, when he saw it in slow motion, he says, I have to give that penalty.
Which is mind-boggling.
He pulled his shirt.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling.
Because
it's not about falling. It's about the pulling the shirt. That's what it's about.
You can't hold
an opponent in the box like that. You can't.
Well, this is another example of that vague language, the legislation in the game. What constitutes holding an opponent? Is it a hand round the shoulder? Is it a hand round the waist? Is it holding the shirt?
Very vague terminology, isn't it?
Now, because you could make an argument, and Flynn, I completely agree with you, but I would say that he's not impeding him. I think if he impeded him at all, it came a phase before that where he was slightly in front of him and then he got out of his way. So we're getting to the point now, we've said this before, you can't even make a challenge in the box.
You can make challenges. We just saw a challenge from the keeper in the last
which is mental. Which is you're actually being like a provocateur right now, like an agent provocateur. You're like going into Toronto City Centre with black boots and a smashing banks windows and that, and we're getting locked up for it. the Edison one, yeah, you can make a tackle and it can be a penalty, a clear foul, and it not be given. It's frustrating. I don't know what the rules are. I would like an objective measure.
They're on
the rules.
FA.com. I was looking at them today.
They don't follow the rules.
When I was researching this, I was looking at the rules and I was like, with these rules I'm looking at and reading now, these decisions weren't that bad at all.
Yeah, they fit the context in which the FA have sort of like built this. And that's why the terminology and the vocabulary is so vague.
And in all fairness to Flynn, how many people actually do that? Actually go on the FA website and look?
No,
I've never done that in my life.
Yeah.
I go on what the pundits tell me and what people say and what.
Oh, the pundits haven't got a clue what the rules are, man. They haven't got what the actual like literature on football law is, and it changes every year, man.
It does change. Yeah.
So you do need to keep up with it. Obviously, like the offside and the VAR rules change, like the handball laws change this season. So it does change a lot, and it does help. And these pundits, a lot of them don't. But there was that minute of bedlam, wasn't there? Just after the penalty, Nathan Ake like cleared the ball off the line from the port after he tried to back pass to his own keeper, headed it over him. And then obviously 30 seconds after that, Martinelli missed an open goal. Could have been 2-1 Arsenal. Gabriel gets set off for a pretty relatively soft collision with Gabriel Jesus as well.
I thought so, but again, two yellows, it wasn't a straight red. I thought it was more of a disciplinary issue for Gabriel rather than... bear in mind all the criticisms I've got for the referee regarding the penalties. I could see how that was a second yellow. For Martinelli, just a quick word on that. When I was listening to it, I listened to the game live, then went back and watched the highlights. It was like, oh, Martinelli's missed a sitter there. That wasn't a sitter, I didn't think. That was the angle was kind of against him. The ball was moving quite quick. He had to make a snatch decision. I didn't think that was a sitter at all. He could have scored.
And his left foot, I think he is right footed as well. From whenever I've seen him score goals and the way he plays, I think he's more dominant on his right foot.
But again, I
know he's on his left. So.
I didn't think it was a given. Like, you know, the people were talking like he was on the 6-yard box, no one in front of him, and he managed to miss. But I didn't see it that way, really.
But the last question really related to the sort of two title challenging games. Like Man City, and we said this a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? It was like when they were 6 points ahead, we were thinking, right, that might be too much of a gap for teams to catch Man City. But really now it's 10-7 if Liverpool win the game in hand. Still, is that too much of a gap? No, it must be more than that, because there must be 2 points ahead. It must be 8 points for Liverpool then, because they dropped two the other night, didn't they, against Chelsea, and City won. So it must be.
It was eight before, and it's two now, isn't it?
I still think my boys Newcastle are going to pull it out.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're going to make a hot run to the
top. Straight for it this year, I don't think there's any chance. I didn't believe you so much last week when you were certain. When they were 6 points ahead, I was like, we'll see. But now, I think you were right.
No, I wouldn't bet against Liverpool making some kind of a surge. Especially as the Champions League heats up.
I think they'll challenge, but I just Man City's depth too much.
Still halfway point, more or less.
Pretty much, yeah.
But you know, there's a lot left then.
You know Pep wants that Champions League, man. You know, and I think if it comes down to it,
and the owners want it as
he's
well.
He's got to choose.
I don't think it will, because he's got like basically two squads of world-class players and they're all following the same philosophy, and he's meant to be a nutcase. So everyone's under like the cosh constantly. But I will say, you know, you can't... you can't anticipate the injuries you're going to have. Like if they have a dip in form, loads of things could happen. And I think they could, a situation might arise where they could be spread a little bit thin. And I think Liverpool are just, if they want to win the league, they should just allow the Champions League, man.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Man City make a good bid for a decent striker. It probably won't be like a marquee signing, but it might be sort of like something to plug a hole. Just in case Gabriel Jesus gets injured, and obviously, you know, De Bruyne has played in that nine position in the past. Phil Foden has played there. Gundogan's played there. So, you know, I think he will probably go and try and sign, you know, a striker, an out-and-out striker to fill that gap. But we'll move on. And this is kind of like what we've been talking about really for the last 2 months. And it's sort of been managers that started off, you know, in their new positions of football teams. Obviously, we've had, I think, 6 or 7 new managers so far this season already. Ranić is the latest one. But have United, I think he's been in charge 5 games now. But have they actually improved under Ranić so far, would you say?
Let's go through the results off the top of my head. 1-1 Newcastle. They beat, is it Burnley? 3-1.
I think they beat Palace 1-0 in his first game in charge.
Okay, 1-0, then 1-1. Then they won 3-1. I think it was against Burnley. Their most recent result was
2-1. Games called off as well, weren't they?
He's had some sort of like marring with the COVID stuff and blah, blah, blah.
They most recently lost to Wolves. I'm missing one result in there. What is it?
Did you have the 1-1 to Newcastle?
Yeah. Anyway,
they're third in the form table over the last 6 games. So under his tenure, they're third in the form table, which doesn't sound too bad.
Which doesn't sound good for the form table, really.
Is it 10 points in 5 games?
So it'll be two wins, 2 draws and a loss.
Breaking even, basically, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Well, it might be three wins, a draw and a loss. Potentially.
2 points.
Should we have a look? Should
I think stop? I've got it here. If we go down.
But anyway, but we'll go through this first. But okay. with you know,
Wreck-It Ralph.
But Bruno Lage as well. He's sort of done very good since he's coming at Wolves as well. But obviously, this is his first defeat as United boss, and Wolves' first win in 40 years, which is a huge moment for them really and their fans.
Their first win ever in 40 years.
Feels that way for a lot of Wolves fans.
Is that what I said? but at a glance, there you go. I've put it down there. So Palace, Norwich, Newcastle, and Burnley. So
Norwich was the one I was missing. Yeah.
You know, very poor teams. Palace have been decent this season, but Norwich, Newcastle, and Burnley—they're relegation candidates. So he's had a very nice, easy start to managerial life. So realistically, you'd expect him to probably get four wins out of five there, and he hasn't. He had that 1-1 draw against Newcastle. He had that just about beat Norwich 1-0, I think. Where did Ronaldo score in that game? And then I think they beat Burnley 3-1, but which they should be comfortably at home. So I think this is his first testing game. This game against Wolves Monday night, and it's five games isn't enough to criticise him. But to be honest, he's got Villa back to back in the cup and then in the Premier League, and for me, it's like. He seems to be getting not out weird, I don't want to say out weird tactically, but against Wolves, the press wasn't there. Once again, it was the same situation we saw under Solskjaer, that they were sort of half pressing. They weren't pressing as a unit, as like, you know, the sort of Chelsea did against Spurs last night. If anybody wants to watch how a team presses, that's how you do it. When the back line's got the ball, you get two men under pressure on the ball, and then everywhere else, you just set the trap. You don't go there straight away because they'll probably go long straight away and they're not going to play the pass if it's not there. You set the trap, you give them about 3 yards, wait for the pass to go in. And that's what Marcus Alonso did. He waited for the pass to go in. Then he timed his run and he intercepted it. And that's what led to the first goal. That's how you set up press. You have to set up traps. For me, when you look at United and the way they're pressing, it's like they're all standing like 2 or 3 yards off. And that's no good because by the time the pass has gone in there, if you give him time on the ball to find the pass, they're going to be able to move about and sort of like get themselves into possession shape a lot easier.
Did you watch Luke Shaw's interview after the game?
He was saying that, the players are like, they're no motivation, they're lacking in confidence.
He said something like, it was really telling that the interviewer was talking about, was being critical of Ranić basically and saying, does the manager need to come up with a few new ideas? And Luke Shaw looked at him and went, I wouldn't go that far, or I wouldn't really say that. But you could see that, like, I got the feeling that the interviewer touched on the truth there, and then Luke Shaw became a bit defensive.
Like. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, so that's what he actually thinks. That is like something he's not happy with that situation, or he expected a more urgent turnaround. Mm-hmm. And then he spent the rest of the interview praising Phil Jones, who's just come back from 2 years out or something, a centre-back, after they've lost 1-0. And I was thinking...
And he was arguably their best player?
Yeah.
What does that say about how poor United have been?
I think Phil Jones is like a meme in football now.
Yeah.
Because Fergie was like, this guy's the next guy. And he just had a few really, like, you know, unfortunately humorous mishaps on the pitch. And, you know, he's been there a long time, hasn't he?
And he always pulls the gun. He always guns. Yeah. Not all the time, Phil Jones.
But I thought, not to turn this into like a whipping session on Phil Jones, but it spoke volumes to me that Luke Shaw, whether he was sticking up for his mate or not, went to those lengths to distract from talking about the game itself. And I was just thinking, that's not a good sign. If that's an inherent thing in the changing rooms, to me, United don't look, or they don't appear from the outside to be like a team that's like gives a shit anymore. They seem like a group of individuals rather than a team.
I think that's half the problem. And he's not going to be able to change the culture and philosophy of that club in five games, in like 6 weeks.
No chance.
He's not going to be able to do it. And I'm telling you, a lot of these players in the United team and your man Nick, mm-hmm. like, who I spoke to a few days ago, he'll voice these same concerns. There's a lot of players in that team that are not good enough. Aaron Wan-Bissaka is not good enough to be a United player. Scott McTominay is not good enough to be a Man United player. Fred, I'll still say, he had one good game the other day. He's not good enough to be a United player. But a lot of them.
You were saying about changing the culture. What culture is there at the moment in Man United?
It seems to be,
if I was going to, obviously it's always difficult to say, we're not there in the dressing room, we're not there on the training ground, do you know what I mean? So we're not seeing what the group dynamics are. But you would have to say what Jim just said, man. You'd have to say that there is definite, there definitely is in this sense of belonging there, is there? Mm-hmm. And there doesn't seem to be like the players are all pulling the same way. It does seem to be there's a lot of individuality within the whole group, do you know what I mean?
So there's no shared culture.
That's probably
part of the problem.
And again, this is speculation, of course it is. We're not privy to their conversations, but when you see teams celebrating after a game or after like a really big win, after a succession of big wins, this is really evident when Leicester won the league back in the day, like 2016 was it? They were like, every time they won a game, they looked like boys, innit? At the end of the game, like slapping each other, like giving each other nuggies and that, touching each other's dicks. And it's like, but they looked like we're in this together, kind of. And you see United players walking off and they're like, yeah. Fuck's sake. Yeah. And you can read a lot into that, of course you can. And obviously, you're not going to, as you said, Ranić's not going to sort this out in five games. I personally think, call me biased, they all fell to shit after Fergie went. He was a man with big ideas. A man who ruled with an iron fist inside a velvet glove. Do you know
it
what I mean?
Hasn't quite been the same since then. But here's might be a good example as to the sort of antithesis to that is Romelu Lukaku. He had that sort of like, not a bust up, but he had the sort of fracas with Tommy Tuchel over at Chelsea. He went over to an Italian news reporter or whatever was doing an interview, and he said something along the lines of kind of, I would have signed a new contract with Inter Milan had they sort of like, get me one, blah, blah, blah.
He called Chelsea his fourth choice.
Yeah, so it's quite demeaning, really.
Yeah.
But anyway.
He can't be doing that.
Nah.
Yeah.
He's trying to make a point, wasn't he?
And he got dropped. Yeah. He got dropped. He got dropped by Tuchel. He wasn't in the game squad, I think, in the Premier League the other day. But he's since come out and apologised publicly. And then Tuchel gave him a start last night against Tottenham. And that geezer was hounding everything. And he was just like hugging his teammates. He was the first one over to the guys that scored.
Overcompensating.
But
a touch. No. But also, you want to see that, don't you? Really?
But you talk about team culture. You wanted to know, like, what does a team culture look like? I would say what Tuchel's doing at Chelsea, that is what Ranić's trying to do. He just hasn't got there yet because either he hasn't got the right group of men.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because essentially,
big part of it, I imagine.
Okay, essentially, you can try and embed any culture into any sort of organisation, and Company Man Flynn would know. So you have to have the right personnel. Do you know what I mean? You can't have like a bunch of misfits that you know have got different like varying degrees of what they think how a club should be ran. You need to get everybody on the same page.
You need fellow company men, and you need guys who can convince the men who aren't company men to follow them, but they're really following you.
Well, think about like back in the glory days with Fergie and that, like Ronaldo when he was first coming up, when he was growing into one of the best players in the world. He was getting away with things that other players weren't allowed to because of his talent.
Mm-hmm.
And he was allowed to do that because the structure around him and the personalities around him were able to compensate for that. Similar to Eric Cantona back in the day. United have always allowed for those kind of flair players, those important, those what are they called? They're like crucial game players who can affect big games in moments because of their talent and their mentality. And
they're like clutch players, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And they might not run back in the 90th minute. They might not do the extra yards that like Dennis Irwin and the lads are going to do. But the balance was right. And at United right now, you've got a lot. I think they've got a lot of talented players. You've referenced a few that aren't quite good enough, but they've still got some like absolute monsters in that team. And I find it quite difficult to believe that you can't organise.
Monsters? What players in the team are world class apart from Cristiano Ronaldo?
You don't think that Bruno Fernandes is like world class?
No.
You don't think so?
No, he's not world class.
Oh, you've stumped me right there, man. You don't think so?
No, I don't think he's world class.
And why not? Why not?
I just don't think he's done it consistently for a long enough time to he's not in De Bruyne's fucking league.
No, that's not true.
De Bruyne is world class.
Yeah. Right. But he's like the top 1%. De Bruyne, I'm
just saying Bruno Fernandes ain't in that top 1%. All right, he's not far true. Off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But he's had what, 1.5 good seasons?
Let's say world class is the top 5%. Is he in there?
What did you watch him in the Euros? Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was terrible.
Thought he was terrible.
He didn't. I can't remember him having a very good game. Portugal weren't great overall, but he didn't have a good Euros.
You raised an interesting point.
He had a good season in his first season at United. He's kind of fell out of favour this season. He hasn't had a great season this season, has he?
What you're saying is going along with some of the things I've read online in that Bruno Fernandes frustrates a lot of Man U fans because there might be a simple quick pass on and he wants to spray the ball 50 yards and do the elegant kind of the showy pass.
They've already got that in Pogba, but he's injured. Do you know what I mean? So they've already got the player that does that. I think Pogba and Bruno Fernandes should be in the same position. I don't think ideally, I don't think they should be on the pitch together. Pogba and obviously Pogba's injured, but Pogba and Bruno Fernandes, I probably wouldn't play together.
I would say Man United, regardless of whether you say their players or what, I would look at them and say on their day, if you get the recipe right, they could smash pretty much any team.
I mean, look at what's happened to Marcus Rashford. Like, you know, like...
Honestly, I think he's been distracted by his social endeavours.
Mm.
That's what I think's happened there.
Who scored? They rate players online. They've gave him an average rating of 6.53 in 600 minutes of football so far this season. So that is like...
Bang average.
Bang average. It's not good enough for a player of his supposed quality.
What's the top rating? 10?
Yeah, out of 10.
Okay, yeah. So yeah.
And I think they measure on like assists, goals...
general involvement like, in the game.
Pass completion rates, all this and that. And at 24 years old, obviously still very, very young, is it time for him to go elsewhere and try and recapture that form that we saw when he first came onto the on the scene under Van Gaal?
You can't be half in and half out and expect to achieve your full potential. He's on the cover of magazines. He's got social interest. And listen... Fair play to him. In actual fact, he's sacrificing a part of his own career to do things that a lot, like 99.9% of footballers don't give a fuck about. And it's not even on them to give a fuck about it. It's just an admirable thing that he's doing.
Right, what's this got to do with his poor performances on the field?
No, but what I'm saying to you is, if you're spending time, energy and effort doing things outside of football, you've got less resources physically, mentally, time-wise to put into football. Now, he's obviously a sick player, a talented player, and he burst onto the scene when he was 18 looking like a done striker. His life and his circumstances has changed since then, and you've seen a correlation between that and his poor performance.
And this is quite interesting. So I was looking at the Who Scored data, and they gave him a rating of when he's come on as a sub, 10 appearances, 2 goals, 6.23, his lowest rating. As an attacking left midfielder, this is this season, 6.24, three appearances, 1 goal. As an attacking right midfielder, 1 appearance, 1 assist, 7.7, by far his highest rating when he's played as an attacking right midfielder. And I know the data sample is very, very small, but if I was looking at that, and which I would be, even if I was like a coach of Man United, I would probably look at this and be like, you know what? I might give him a chance on the right, man.
Put him on the right.
It's not fucking rocket science, is it? And I know that...
Give him one more go. Like you said, the data's very small. One appearance on the right.
Give him one more chance. Give him another go. If he has a good game there, right, give him another go.
But here's another thing. Like, you might not get the best results out of him by giving him one more game. Give him a run of games in there. Like, the thing. Football is so high stakes that you can't afford to be fucking around saying, oh, I might give him a chance on the right. You've got FA Cup, like League Cup, the league. They're not even in the Champions League anymore, are they?
But that's
like,
his position. He's not an out and out striker anyway. So I think, where is Marcus Rashford's best position?
I'd much rather stick him up front than stick him on a wing. Much rather, man.
Do you think
his delivery is that great? I don't think it is.
Because obviously United want to play the 4-2-2-2, which is what Tuchel played the other night against Spurs, and they donned it. So, and United fans are saying that system, you know, isn't looking too great. You know, they're not looking that fluid, and that, you know, the press hasn't quite got there yet, sort of the out of possession. And Wolves had 19 shots against them the other day. Do you know what I mean? Bruno Fernandes hit the bar, should have scored. But generally, Wolves look the better team. So, and they were getting out of their press really, really easily once again. So, I mean, Flynn, have you got any stats to suggest, you know, what... You know, because at the end of the day, we love the data here, don't we? We are advocates of like data in sport.
Genuine, like, genuine.
No, I am massively. I want to look at data. I don't want to look at. I don't want to have a gut feeling about how random.
You don't want gut feelings.
So, what is the data?
So the data is Ali had 13 games this season and amassed 18 points. So that's an average points per game of 1.38. So far, Ranieri's had just 5 games, but 10 points. So he's on a 2 points per game average so far.
So significantly better.
Significantly better. Like, it's a much smaller data sample, but he's doing well. He's doing well
so far.
But
what that data sample doesn't tell you is that he's played 3 teams that are in the bottom... 4 teams that are in the bottom half.
That's a good point.
That's what that doesn't tell you. So I would say, you know, the next five games will be a serious sort of test of what Rangnick's system's looking like.
Absolutely. And what we've been looking at lately is not only the next five, the next 6 to 12 games are really when we're going to see if he's going to sink or swim.
Let's call it 12, isn't it?
Let's call it 12 and see how it goes.
And we've been talking about this honeymoon period. We need to get a scientific name for him. I'm sure there is that lady that did the research.
Flynn's period, we're going to
Flynn's
call
period.
It.
Right, so in Flynn period.
That sounds different.
Yeah. Sounds like something to do with gravity, innit? Like Murphy's law, innit? Flynn's law.
Constant.
Flynn's constant.
I was thinking menstruation, but...
Yeah, menstruation.
Is this honeymoon period exact science? Because Watford fans would argue absolutely not. I think they've regressed under Ranieri since he's been there. I think he's been there for 11 games now. They're currently rock bottom of the form table over the past six games. Ranieri is only at 18.18% win rate since taking over in October. At the time of his appointment, Watford were 15th in the Premier League with two wins from seven, which you would argue isn't bad form for a team that's just been promoted. And they've done their very best to keep their goal scorers, Emmanuel Denis and Ismail Assar of Nigeria and Senegal respectively, from going to the AFCON, the African Cup of Nations, which has been a massive source of controversy. So Dennis apparently told the Nigerian head coach that Watford did everything possible to stop him from going to the AFCON. Let's talk about sort of Watford's poor form first. Ranieri's had a bit of a weird career, really.
He had a good start, didn't he, at Watford?
I think he might have won his first game, perhaps. And that would be interesting to see, like, what the percentage of managers in the Premier League winning their first game would be. I bet it's higher. Ooh. I bet it's higher than the sort of, like, the average sort of... He's managed basically, like, 20 teams. He's been all over the region, do you know what I mean? And I think he had a stint with Greece. And I think they had their, like, most, like... ignominious loss of all time. I think they lost like 1-0 to Faroe Islands or something. And like the Greeks absolutely hated him. But then the next year he went and won the Premier League with Leicester. And that's been his kind of like, you know, his defining moment as a career. But then since then, like, I think he did have a job in between.
Well, he did take Chelsea to second pre-Mourinho. I think he set up the foundations that Mourinho built upon to build an absolutely exquisite Chelsea team back in the day. So he deserves a lot of credit there, to be honest.
But he's come to Watford, and to be fair, Watford have been like, you know, they're like a carousel with their managers. I mean, I don't know how many managers they've had in sort of the last 10 years.
As bad as Blues decade. Or no?
What, possibly worse than Blues.
Oh my God, you don't hear that often, do you?
And it's the same manager as well, like, especially Joe Pangazzola.
That's
anyway.
A first on the podcast, ladies and gentlemen.
Even worse than Blues.
In terms of their, like, you know, like, if you don't do well in 12 games, like, you've gone. I think it's the Pozzo family that own another Italian club. It might be Napoli.
That's where all the Mafia are from, isn't it?
Udinese. Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely Napoli, Mafia.
Yeah.
Run.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, it's a pure Mafia-run club. But he's not doing well. And then he's got this controversy with not letting his players go to the FM combinations, which, for me, if that was the Euros or that was Copa America... There'd be no questions, would there? You'd go and play for France, you'd go and play for England, you'd go and play for Spain.
The positioning of the African Cup of Nations in the middle of the season tells you all you need to know, because the Euros and the fucking World Cup and that, and even the Copa America, are in the summer where there's no conflict. I mean, I would say...
But why are they in the summer?
What do you mean?
Look at Africa, how hot is Africa in the summer? So they can't play in the summer, can they? With like 50 degree heat.
Well, if you're a pussy, do you know what I mean? What do you want me to do? Do you want to pay your wages for you?
I can't
help the sun, can you?
A lot of Africa's under the...
So, what a great argument. Fucking great argument. No,
no, but the summer months in South Africa will be like Australia. It'll be backwards. So it'll be actually quite cool there. It's under the equator, isn't it, South Africa?
Mate, the geographical company, man. It's unreal.
It's
just saved me. Saved me from my own ignorance.
Depends where it is in Africa, though, isn't it?
So, as long as it's under the equator. Yeah. South Africa, like, Zimbabwe, Zambia.
Not having a pissing contest, but say, like, I think that's actually reflective of it's a less important tournament. Like, what's it called? What's the Asian one? Where all Saudi Arabia and that place.
Is it less important to Denis, who's from Nigeria, and Ismail Assar from Senegal?
And to them, like, they're home nations.
Yeah, they want to go and represent their country.
No, listen, of course not. But I'm saying importance in terms of profitability. How many people watch the African Cup of Nations versus how many people watch the Euros and how many people watch the World Cup? And
not privy to the figures, but versus, I imagine a lot less.
Versus how many people invest in the African Cup of Nations and how many people invest in the World Cup and the Euros, how many sponsorships comes in, how many advertisements come in. Mate, it's a money thing. Isn't it?
And why is that?
The global, because of infrastructure and stuff like that, football and bigger tournaments just started in Europe, and then the European countries and the South American countries, they kind of had a head start on that kind of stuff. So they've got a slightly longer lineage of playing that for a number of reasons that are not fair and just and cruel and horrible and all that. I understand that. But if you're the last person to the party, you're not going to get a slot in the summer where you should have one, probably. That's what I'm saying.
I think that's a very good assessment.
Yeah,
that could stay in. I thought we were going to go a bit deep in that.
We're going to get a bit
hairier
there for a bit.
But we'll leave that there. It's unfair, though.
Of course it is.
And it just so happens that they're both their top goal scorers, aren't it?
Is he allowed?
So they know how fucked they're going to be if they do let him go.
Is Ranieri and Watford allowed to do that?
I'm not sure what the exact rules are.
I think they're allowed to have a little pinch of the elbow and a little wink. You know what I mean? But I don't think they're allowed to say, no, you're not going.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Nigerian head coach was essentially saying, like, it's a farce, man. And like, Denis, however you want to pronounce his name, he said that, like, Watford were doing absolutely everything they could to not let him go.
Would you remember the interview with Roy Keane when he was in the Ireland set up with Martin O'Neill? And he was flipping because all the lads, the Irish lads who'd play for Everton, when the Irish qualifiers would come up, all of a sudden they're injured. And he's like, mate, look, what's going on here? It's a similar sort of thing. Yeah, like, they didn't want to play. They would rather focus on the Premier League. The managers had a word. Mm. Ireland aren't the biggest team. They're probably not going to... So this exists within the European spectrum as well. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If you can't be asked to like turn out on a Wednesday when you've got a cup game on a Saturday and this, that and the other. It happens all the time, man, I think.
All right, let's have a quick word on transfer news and then we'll get the five things out of the way. And then we've got a pretty small boxing section, so we're quite close to the end. But one of the biggest transfer news really is Coutinho going to Villa, which would probably be Villa's most high-profile signing ever.
I read this today. Well, I watched a video of Stevie G's reaction to the questions. And
he's media pro and he's had his media training. And
I was thinking, this kid is fucking bulletproof. They're going, what's the speculation about Coutinho? And it's like, I'm not going to answer that. Obviously, he's a great player, but I wouldn't like other people sending out a warning shots like to other people saying, I wouldn't like other managers to talk about my players when they're under contract in the sense, so I'm not going to do it to him. And then he spent the next 2 minutes.
So smooth.
He's a company
smooth.
Man.
He's company had media training.
Yeah, but listen, definitely. He spent the next 2 minutes complimenting the fuck out of Coutinho. Like, so you don't get called a magician if you're not like a great player. But I'm not saying that I'm interested in him. If we know, you guys will know. And I was just thinking, I like the sound of this.
That's fair enough. Because honestly, he was world class when he was at Liverpool. I think I was reading in the paper that there were 60 odd games together, over 60% win rate together. Obviously, he's trying to get the band back together. I think that'd be a great sign for Villa. But I'd say there's quite a few Prem teams that would be interested. And if I'm not mistaken, he might be on 200k plus a week. I think he's on high wages.
Villa can afford that, though.
So I think Villa would... I don't think they'd have to pay all that to Barca, but they'd have to subsidise probably at least 70% of it.
Okay, so let's look at it from Coutinho, who's used to dining at the top table of European football. What's your incentive, other than Stevie G, to go to Villa?
Is he a big enough incentive?
It's hard. Does he want to play football, though? That's the main thing. He hasn't been playing football. So he's probably going to have that hunger to play now, because he's been a bit sort of, for whatever reason, and all the sort of misdemeanors that have happened at Barca and all their sort of financial troubling and, you know, that sort of that side of it. Like, he hasn't really been, him and Umtiti, I don't think they've really been sort of like mainstays in the Barcelona team. So I wonder if that's going to give him that, if that's reignited his fire to go and play again. Because that was a bad move for Coutinho going to Barca, wasn't it?
Is there a parallel to be drawn here between Coutinho potentially going to Villa and James Rodriguez at Everton? A world-class European player. I mean, Everton, I'd say they're a commensurate club.
I would say that's a very good example to use, because he was at Bayern Munich. He went on loan there for a couple of years, didn't he, from Real Madrid. And then was he anywhere in between? I think he might have gone back to Real Madrid, but then they shipped him and Everton signed him. As you said, Everton, their business under Farid Moshiri and their director of football, they've got a lot of things wrong as well. So that's probably like a poor example of how to conduct your transfer business.
would Coutinho be in that same mould? But I'm saying, like, you know, it's such a fucking, it's such a crapshoot, ain't it, really? Do you know what I mean? These top players, they can turn it on when they want. And when they come back, and if they're in a place where they feel valued and they feel, you know, comfortable, then they can start to flourish and their talent starts to come out.
Such a massive part of it, isn't it? Like, oh, the dynamics, the motivation, and
the mental side of sports is just incredible. And I like the fact that we talk about that, because you hear a lot of these pundits and they talk about things in such black and white. And it's I was reading the match report of, like, the Chelsea and Tottenham game from the Sun, and I was just they're so like objective.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, or if that's right, seemingly objective.
Yeah, and it's just and they don't really sort of, like, look into, like, what might be going on elsewhere. Obviously, they ain't got time. They got to write up what they've only got, like, 5,000 words to write their match report or whatever. But things like this, you have to, you know, especially when you're coming from Barcelona, who are a huge club. Obviously, you know, not in their sort of, like, in their prettiest form at the minute. But going to somewhere like Villa, that could really, I would say, reignite his career. What is he, 30 years old now, something like that? He goes to Villa and has a couple of good seasons, potentially could go somewhere else. But he's at his payday now. He might want to go to Villa and just play football, man.
Just play,
enjoy himself. Hopefully he does, because that'd be a fucking great signing for Villa.
Or do it till he's like 33, then, like, go China, go Saudi Arabia, get the big bag for doing absolutely fuck all. Like, do you know what I mean? But James Rodriguez did that, and now he's in, like, some terrible team, and he's like, oh my God, what have I done? Looks like I'm not playing high level football.
He was one of the most sought after players after that World Cup in, what, 2010?
14.
Was it 2014? Right. Where he scored 6 goals from, he was the golden boot winner. A
couple of absolute bangers.
I think they were all, like, pure quality.
What team did he go to then?
Real Madrid signed him, didn't they?
Yeah, after that. But he's been around the block a little bit now. But now he's playing in Saudi Arabia, yeah. And there's a meme of him in attendance at the first game for the team he's just signed for. And it's literally like a Sunday league quality. And he's, like, got his hands in his head, like, what have I just done? But, you know.
But he'll be getting paid. So. He'll be getting paid. Talking about getting paid, Kieran Trippier signing for Newcastle. God knows what wage he's going to be on. But Trevin Sinclair was on TalkSport the other day, suggested that he was signing for Newcastle for the glory and not the money.
I'm sure the money had nothing to do with
which
it.
Absolutely nothing. The fact that they're 10 times richer than Man City owners, and they basically own, like, the oil gulf.
I think Trippier
in its entirety.
Trippier's done his bits now, though, hasn't he? I think he's won big trophies with Atletico, hasn't he? How long has he been there? 2-3 years? Something
like that. Still 31. I thought he was a lot older than that, but I think he's still got pace. He's still a good player. He was Southgate's sort of right-hand man at that position. So I think it's probably a good move for him, man.
I think it's
and
decent.
Great sign for Newcastle.
I think it's decent because you have to open the dam at some point. You know, they're willing to throw money at things. I think that's a sensible signing. They haven't gone for one of those attacking flair players. You know what I mean? Who are going to, obviously he's going to command a lot of money, but it's not like they've just got Neymar through the door. He's going to do fuck all, kind of, and just take, and give nothing back. That speaks to a little bit more of a pragmatic approach for Newcastle, which is a good start for someone, a team who's going to end up throwing.
You call it pragmatic now, but we don't know what his contract is at the minute. Like,
what if it's 300 grand a week? Is that too much?
Way too much. He wouldn't be able to command that. He's not going to be on that at Atletico. He's probably going to be on 120. Let's go.
Really?
If that.
That sounds low. I mean, top level European club? Ish.
For right back.
150.
Maybe. 150 tops, I would say. Yeah. So if he's getting anything above 250, he's getting a huge wage bump at 31 years old. Doesn't happen.
Robbing the bank.
What do you think Newcastle are doing? Are they going to be wildly spending money like that? Are they going to be smart? They've got more money.
I don't think they're going to care about financial fair play, really, because at the end of the day.
What are you going to do? Fine them.
Yeah. Well, exactly. What you do, kick them out of Europe. They've got no chance of being in Europe this year. They just want to stay in the league. Mm-hmm. So
free falling like Tom Petty, man. They're absolutely killing it.
So they're not going to give a shit. And the financial fair play rules are a joke, really, in both the Premier League and the Championship. But that's another question for another day. But Ferran Torres unveiled at Barca, £55 million move from Man City. Wasn't impressed with his customary juggling that they do at Barca. Have you seen this?
No.
Have you heard about this?
He did about 6 kick-ups, and that was it. Usually when Barcelona unveil players.
Yeah. And Real Madrid as well. They do.
Yeah, they do at Real Madrid. Yeah. I don't know why.
It's mad.
The big clubs.
It's so much pressure.
And like 25,000 gezers just turn up. Like on a day off. Like, or whatever, I don't know.
Or they work. No, they work.
And they just come out and it's just like sign in, blah, 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 and they shake hands, blah, blah, blah. And then like yeah. they get him to do some kick ups and that.
Some party tricks.
And Marcus Brathwaite, and he, Marcus Brathwaite became a meme and he was getting the piss taken out of him because like Marcus Brathwaite should never have been playing for Barcelona. He was playing for like Middlesbrough a couple of years ago. So like the fact he went to Barcelona was like unbelievable. And he was getting the piss taken out of him because he tried some like really sort of like difficult tricks. But he did like three round the worlds on the trot, yeah. which is really difficult. Like Ferran Torres just rocked up and did like six kick ups, like something I could do, innit? Like then he didn't even try and like do anything complicated. And the fans were a bit like, I'm sure I heard a few boos, man. Like, because they want to see you try and do something like interesting. And if you're a professional footballer, I'd expect you to be able to have a few tricks up your sleeves. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, mate.
Do six kick ups.
How much did they pay for him?
$55 million.
Well spent. Sounds like.
You know what I mean? You spent at least a few fucking round the world for that. $10 million
a kick up.
Killing it.
But
weird tradition.
It is a bit strange. But at the end of the day, Barcelona. I don't know where they're getting their dough from.
Probably Newcastle owners, isn't it? Probably like shadow company. Like, do you know what I mean?
I'd be surprised. Definitely. Yeah. But United apparently keen on Ruben Neves.
Is that the Wolves player?
Yeah.
Wasn't he ripping it up the other night? Like?
Yeah, 24 years old. I thought he was like 30. I don't know why I thought he was old, but he's like 24. And he's absolutely killing it. He was killing it in the Championship. He only scores good goals.
Where does he play? Midfielder, centre
midfielder. Yeah, right, Portuguese. Yeah. Neves.
Oh, is he the one that scores all the bangers, Neves?
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, yeah. Sick.
The Portuguese, Neves.
It's not going to solve their problems, is it, really?
Because Wolves absolutely hate the Portuguese, isn't it?
That's not going to save their McFred problems, is it, really?
It would. Wait. They need a marshal. They need a midfield marshal.
I'll show you Marshall.
Don't want to see Marshall more. But, they need a dynamic. They need a Conte, man. They need an absolute like.
Yeah, they're easy to come by, aren't they?
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Diamond doesn't, mate. Oh, you know what they need? A fucking Zidane. You know what I mean?
But honestly, they do need someone like Højbjerg, man, from Tottenham. I think he'd probably be a decent signing for United. He probably was on their radar at one point, but they don't really need another creative attacking midfielder like someone like Bruno Fernandes, someone like. I mean, Jadon Sancho has been shocking since he's been there. He's more of an out-and-out winger, but. And then obviously you've got Pogba coming back to. Well, is he really injured or is he just like chilling? Who knows? No one can seem to get a bit of a rain on him, really, can they?
I'm glad to not hear about his stunning volleys anymore. And on the YouTube thumbnail, and you see it, and it's just like three deflections and it trickles in through the keeper's legs. Absolutely stunning volley. Trying to keep his market value up. Fucking sneaky bastard.
But finally, Ramsey set to leave Juve. Like, who would this be a good signing for in the Prem?
We'll have him back.
So Djokovic says.
Arsenal will definitely have Ramsey back. 100%.
I think that'd be a great signing for Arsenal.
It'd be perfect.
I'd like to see him back there because he was class at Arsenal, man.
He's a sick player, man. Absolutely sick. So many bangers. So many, like, he was what, even after he had that horrific leg break, was it Stoke, like, all those years ago? Coming back from an injury like that, being pivotal, and, like, always, all right, he's not the perfect midfield player, but he's got the flair. He wants to win. He's like if Jack Wilshere hadn't fallen off the wagon, do you know what I mean? That's the kind of player he is. He's achieved his potential, went to Juve, did bits there, happy to have him back. He'll probably go to Chelsea and score a hat-trick against us.
Oh, Wilson. Wilshere, man, he was never good since fucking Wenger caught him smoking fags, innit? His career just went down from then, do you know what I mean? Hated the fact that he smoked. Had a few cheeky.
How could you be an elite footballer and smoke, though, man?
Johan Cruyff used to blaze 40 a day, man. One of the best.
40 a day?
No. One of the best in history. He said when they were on training routes through the woods and that, when he's training with Ajax, he used to just chill, just to fuck off into the bushes, blaze a few fags, and then miss out. And then he's Johan Cruyff is the birth. He's like the touchstone of a philosophical outpouring in football, isn't it? Like teams like Ajax. Teams like Barcelona, Netherlands, all that. Like, he's an actual thing in the history of football.
Like, he's the cornerstone of, like, that sort of model of, like, the way football's been played.
Uh-huh.
Like, the sort of, like, total football stuff.
Yeah, it's him, isn't it?
Like, and the possession-based stuff and all this philosophy about football.
He smoked 40 a day.
40 a day.
And he smoked 40 a day.
So, kids, if you're listening...
And he also used to play baseball as well. There's another weird fact about Johan Cruyff. He used to play baseball.
It's not that unbelievable, though. Look how many drugs Maradona must have used to be doing, man. Come on.
I know the difference. The times in my life when I've not been smoking and I was cycling quite heavily, I couldn't do anywhere, like, I couldn't do 10% of it in the times of life when I have been smoking.
Yeah, imagine.
And it's not 40 a day.
Imagine what Cruyff could have been.
Right, should we do the five things, yeah?
Let's do it.
So number one, Antonio Brown, a wide receiver for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, had an absolute heads gone moment against the New York Jets at the MetLife. It is believed that Brown, who hasn't been shy of controversy throughout his whole career, to be fair, he had a disagreement apparently with coach Bruce Arians about going into the game due to the level of Brown's fitness. Supposedly he was nursing an ankle injury, but it was reported that Brown was unhappy at being asked to go back in and take some snaps, because he'd not practiced all week due to an ankle injury. So there's been a lot of sort of back and forth between the both camps, really. Coach Arians apparently said something along the lines of, if you're not going in, then you're no longer a part of this team, kind of thing. To which Brown then proceeded to tear off his shirt, threw it onto the bench, took off his underlayer, threw that into the crowd, took off his gloves, threw that into the crowd, and then like walked through the end zone just like with his arms aloft to the New York Jets and like, you know, sort of doing peace signs and that to the crowd. Like, I thought it was absolutely great, to be honest. And like, I think there's a culture in the NFL where it's like very regimented, like you have to listen to your coach. It's kind of the same in football. It reminds me a bit when Kepa wouldn't come off when what's his name, the geezer that used to smoke the Chelsea,
what's his name, begins with an M, doesn't it?
Anyway,
I know what you mean.
The ex-Chelsea coach that always used to smoke, he was at Napoli. His name escapes me. It reminded me of that when he tried to take Kepa off, Kepa Arrizabalaga. Tried to take him off during the game because he wanted to put on Willy Caballero because he's like a penalty specialist. And Kepa was like, nah, I ain't coming off. It kind of reminded me like that. It was a bit of like that fractious nature between sort of coach and player. Because players really should do everything the coach says, isn't it, to be honest. But obviously, in this case, it's happened and then he's lost his job over it.
Well, I noticed there was nothing wrong with his ankle when he was doing victory laps of the fucking NFL pitch. You know what I mean? Draw a line somewhere, mate.
To be fair, he's since said that he's reflected on his reaction, but there was a trigger, and the trigger was someone telling me that I'm not allowed to feel pain.
Bit of a passive aggressive apology there. I'm really sorry, I was emotionally triggered by you being a prick.
You are. You are, you're not going in because you're hurting. You're not allowed to feel pain. You know what I mean?
Number two is Jake Paul's offer, updated offer to Dana White. Now we've got the link here from the Mirror, which was today, which is building off. The first one was that absolutely outrageous tweet of demands from Jake Paul saying he would definitely get into the octagon if Dana White meets his financial demands for his fighters. And there is that element of grandstanding, of shithousery. But also, when you look at his demands, they're not outrageous. He's just putting a billionaire on blast. And it's one of the most like uplifting things you can see. Obviously, Jake Paul is a millionaire himself. I would not consider him far below the 1% in terms of his income and his lifestyle, etc. But the fact that he's using his platform to make this kind of a case, obviously he's making a name for himself as well, but he's actually bringing repeated focus to the fighter pay debate, which I really appreciate. So we'll go through the comments from the Mirror. So Jake Paul offered Dana White a fresh wager after the UFC president responded to Paul's accusation that he uses cocaine by ordering the pair to get drug tested as part of the stipulation. So you can see the kind of game that Jake Paul's playing. It's not just about the fighter pay. He's kind of trying to defame Dana White, who's a famously prickly guy. And he said that he initially wanted $50,000 minimum for UFC fighters. He said, look, I'll meet you halfway. I want 40 grand and drug tests and all this. And he said he'll fight Masvidal in the cage. And I imagine he wants this to be part of like a thriller co-promotion or something like that. So do you think he has any intention of fighting Jorge Masvidal in a mixed martial arts?
He'd get destroyed. Oh, I
feel like he's levels above Tyron Woodley. Like, and he's also fighting him in his element. Do you know what I mean?
Because so that's the
he's gone into the lion's den.
Well, that's the fulcrum point around which all this news rotates. Because if that's not a genuine offer, then what are we talking about?
But he sort of made his last 12 months, or probably even longer than that, I've just been like, been a troll basically. And that's what he's doing to Dana. He's trolling him. And I watched a video from Dana White in sort of like in the aftermath of this, in response to it. And he was sort of saying like, look, if you want to go and start your own company and do your own enterprise and go and do it, like, I've worked hard to sort of build what I've built here. Like, my fires are happy. I'm not sure how truthful that is. But he did sort of make a good case that, you know, he's sort of like trying to rile him up a little bit. I wouldn't say Dana White is by any means treating his fighters badly, but I like the fact that he's bringing attention, that Jake Paul's bringing attention to the fact that fighters should be getting paid a little bit more for the sort of line of work that they're in, I would say so. 100%.
And the point I forgot to mention there is that he's advocating for long-term healthcare for fighters, which is crucial, and it's mad that it doesn't exist in boxing and in MMA. It's mental, really, that in a sport where the name of the game is head trauma.
There must be insurance companies that you can buy insurance for sports.
Company man's well set to fill us in now.
Yeah, no, that would be absolutely impossible for him to do that. They get healthcare. One of my old jobs was involved very often seeing bills from US hospitals. It's impossible. It's impossible. He does look after them. While they're fighting for him, they get access to top-level healthcare in the States.
Okay.
Which is arguably one of the best healthcare, one of the best countries for healthcare in the world, except for the cost bit.
Yeah.
All the best doctors in the world move there. But it's impossible to have, like, the contracts you'd need to draw up. Yeah, healthcare for the rest of your life after you finish that job.
I don't know if he's advocating for lifelong healthcare.
Just while you're under employment,
they have
UFC.
That. They have that.
But like they have health insurance, like they've got different. But you'd be probably best placed to speak on this because they have different bands of insurance, and that's based on risk.
Absolutely.
What kind of healthcare would you be able to command when your job is as a combat sports athlete?
You should have the top level, but it depends.
I wouldn't cover anyone like that.
And I think this is part of the problem, is that, like, again, it's a bigger conversation about US healthcare, etc., but it might not be actually a viable thing to do.
It's not a viable thing, I don't think. It'd be so expensive for him to do that. But maybe more than the
company. What I'm saying is, why isn't there any, and I'll tell you what, we should start the company right now. Why isn't there any insurance companies that are specifically for combat sports?
Because of that premium. Because
you'd end up spending a lot when they all get old and they need like...
No, but just while they're... So when they're going for a fight, so they pay you, I don't know, let's say $500 a week, whatever it might be. If they have, like, if they break their leg, like, you know, during a fight or whatever happens, you know, any sort of health conditions, then obviously you'd foot the bill. It'd probably be a risky endeavor, but if you've already got money, that'd be...
People are trying to game the system as well.
I'd be shocked if there isn't a sport-related insurance company out there.
I'm sure there are.
For UFC fighters and boxers.
I'm sure there are, but to start a company like that, the amount of capital you'd need would be massive.
Incredible, because...
A leg surgery in the States is easily 30K.
Yeah.
Easily. Ring up the Saudis, man. Ring up the Saudis. They do a few shows in Abu Dhabi every year, don't they? Come on, man. It's absolutely sweet. But yeah, I think if Jake Paul goes into the cage with Jorge Masvidal, that's game, set, and match on his combat sports career.
I don't think he'll do it, man.
I think he's given him an impossible demand,
knowing that
he'll never end up in the
ring. Yeah, lovely. It's
a smart play, man. Yeah. That's a good chess move.
Yeah, exactly, good chess move.
Right, number three, China bans footballers with tattoos, tells them to get removed or cover them up as they set a poor precedent to society. What do you think of this?
Well, I looked into this thinking, what's the problem? Because obviously it's a well-known thing in Japan and in China that it's like you're dishonouring yourself and the people around you by having tattoos. And I did a minimal bit of reading, and it stems back to when people used to be branded with tattoos as a form of punishment. So it was a way for them to say, this fucker's a criminal, he's going to steal something, a way to marginalise people. And obviously Chinese people, being the long game sort of people, that's managed to stay over generations and generations. So it seems like, I'd say it was like not fair and not shocking, but at the same time, the wider conversation generally accepts that you have to respect other people's traditions and values. It seems a bit weird to me. Who gives a fuck if you've got like a dragon? It doesn't have to be a dragon. It could be anything. It could be, you know, something, a ginger,
a pig, a duck,
or a rat, or anything like that. So you could
any of the animals from the fable.
Yeah, but you know, and about this, they don't have to get removed. Yeah, exactly, could be anything. But they're not saying you have to remove them. You can just wear like a long sleeve top, so it's not a big deal for me. But you know what I mean.
Well, they did say that you should remove them unless you can prove that you're exempt from removing them, they said. Then you're allowed to come
exempt.
On the bus.
Exempt. Yeah. I swear I'd never heard that word before coronavirus. No, yeah.
Exempt. Words everywhere.
Was it in the dictionary before?
They've also said, so that's for teams, currently established teams, people over 23 who are already in the Chinese football system. They've also said that... for teams at the under 20 level and below, the recruitment of players with tattoos is strictly prohibited now.
Yeah, so you're fucked, isn't it? If you're 18, you've got a tattoo, you have to remove it. Or
that's outrageous. So you're telling me they're not going to sign? They're not going to give game time to the Chinese Messi just because he's got just because he's got
a panda bear tattooed on his face?
Oh dear. Oh yeah. Strictly prohibited.
It's a sexual harassment
panda. Right, number four. Dusan Tadic has broke Messi's record of 36 assists in a calendar year in 2021, and not a single person is talking about it. It's just all a circus, really, isn't it?
Of course it is, man. It's all advertising. When's Tadic been on the cover of FIFA, has he? So who gives a fuck?
Isn't it?
It's one of those.
You know what I mean? World record.
Who?
World record assists.
Are you talking about
Dusan Tadic for our boys Ajax, man? Come on, let's give represent
Buffalo Soldier Tadic, man. Absolutely killing
him. I mean, tattoos are fucking spliffs and that.
It doesn't surprise me that a less marketable player is receiving less attention. When if Messi, do you remember the coverage that Messi's first goal for PSG got? Like, they've been drawing games left, right, and centre ever since he's gone there. Like, no, it's about the personality and about the marketability.
So he's been the most wasteful person. Like in football, I think, since he's gone to PSG.
It's not really a sexy record. It's assists, isn't it? If it was goals, I think people probably would be talking about
it. I completely disagree. I could have an hour-long conversation about how sexy assists are.
Now, if they want to make the conversation sexy, that's why it's like, oh, he's not just a selfish goal scorer. He's contributing to the team. It's about the conversation that they put forward in the studio and over the radio. Wait, 1947, but... On YouTube, you know, whatever. But yeah, that's about it. It's not objective, is it? It's never objective.
But assists, man, honestly.
Assists are important, obviously, but come on. It's goals people want to hear about. It's top.
Talk to Joe Barr about the difference between assists and goals, man. He'll tell you about assists.
He never makes it this far into the podcast. So we're all right, man. Anyway. 20 minutes while he's having a shower. That's what he said to me.
As soon as I use a big word, he turns it off, innit? Number five, college football linebacker tipped to become one of Scotland's most successful athletes as he enters the NFL draft.
Yeah, so this
I didn't even write his name down for some odd reason.
David Ajabo, isn't it?
David Ajabo, there you go.
And he came out with this absolute top quality quote. So he said, being a soccer player back home, then a basketball player, all those headshots just didn't seem appealing. He said, you see full grown men going at full speed into each other. But I looked past that. And saw what the future held.
What does it mean by headshots?
Because he's playing in the NFL, isn't it?
Just smashing.
He went from being a football player, then to being a basketball player, and now he's going to play in the NFL. And I thought to myself, what a mad thing to just think, yeah, I'll deal with that later.
All I can say is, he's a fan, student, athlete. He must be a fan, student, athlete.
Well, he's looking past head trauma into what the future might bring, which is going to be him dribbling into his cornflakes.
Oh, yeah.
While the missus frolics with the gardener. His house is just going to be these hulking manservants, the hairless from the neck down. Just, you know. So, yeah. Oh, sweet. Look past that head trauma. Nice one.
I look past the headshots.
So what happens to everyone with head trauma?
I imagine,
You get loads of fit manservants.
CTE'd off it.
No, that's his missus. She's pulling the puppet strings, mate.
But, you know, he could become one of the most famous Scottish sports people of all time.
Big up the jocks.
Could be.
Because I can't think of many famous Scottish sports people, can you?
Ken Buchanan.
Colin Montgomery.
Rod Stewart.
Pull the pants.
I put my pants.
Wait, so this dude was a soccer player, then basketball, now NFL.
I don't know how he played football. He's like 6'4", 18 stone.
I don't know what position he played. Maybe he's a bit like Akinfenwa.
Oh yeah, Schmeichel.
The beast, proper small geezer. You've not seen Akinfenwa?
No.
Beast. There's a reason why they call him the beast.
Goring lads on the pitch.
Yeah, literally.
All right, so answer the combat sports section, a spa section this week, and the world's worst highlight video from PBC on Fox for Charles Martin versus Luis Ortiz. A 2:48 video that gives 1:20 to the introductions and doesn't include the knockout. Like, what is the actual point? And I was...
It's like trying to watch porn as a 16-year-old, you know, and trying to watch some decent porn anywhere, like, on terrestrial TV.
Nah, we had Slimes' videos.
We had Slimes' dad for that.
Big up, Slimes.
Taco Ravan, 1 billion.
So Charles Martin and Luis Ortiz, they've fought the best and they've come up short. So Charles Martin lost his IBF heavyweight title to Anthony Joshua in his first defence in 2016.
Very abruptly, innit? He got absolutely annihilated. Yeah. Was it first round?
Second, I think.
Yeah.
Up to this fight with Ortiz, he's clawed back 5 wins against a single loss to Adam Konacki, which is no shame. And that landed him the fight against Luis Ortiz, who Deontay Wilder knocked out twice after trading on the cards. And I think Wilder may have cracked the old enamel, because Martin dropped him in rounds 1 and 4, first with a well-timed 1-2, second time with a jab, which is really surprising at any level of the sport. The jab shook Ortiz a few times throughout the fight, but fair play to him. He spent a lifetime in the ring. He showed no hesitation. He worked his way back into the fight, and in the 6th round, punched Martin to a standstill and bundled him into the ropes, where his left glove became entangled between the top 2 strands.
And you compared this to a fight that was from a few years ago.
A few months ago. Baumgartner versus Terry Harper, where she punched her into another time zone. Is that what you're talking about?
Sent her into a different dimension.
Yeah, she knocked her unconscious while she was still standing up, and then the cameras caught her in the corner saying, "Do you want chips with that? or do you want a fish supper?" Because she used to work at a chip shop, and she literally... She punched her back into her own childhood, which is frightening.
Like in the Disney Pixar films where someone gets knocked back into a child, like Ratatouille, isn't it? Like,
not nice, but Martin was in that kind of state with his left glove entangled between the top 2 strands, and this actually worked in his favour because it gave him extra time to recover. In the end, it didn't really make a difference, because after Martin answered the 8 count, Ortiz rushed him and forced the finish pretty much a minute later. And I think a lot of heavyweights might look at this fight and fancy their chances against both of these lads. Ortiz is an immense talent, but his prime's long gone. I think he's about 65 years old, to be honest.
Charles... 42 on the record.
Yeah, but... officially, yeah. Charles Martin has good size and a decent left hand, but looks like he's trying to slide over treacle whenever he moves. His feet are so slow.
Mate, he's such an unattractive fighter to watch.
Honestly,
it's shocking, man.
There seems to be a disconnect between his upper and lower body. I don't know what's going on. But both of them have good name value and they're highly ranked, so there's plenty of fights out there for them if they want. And
We were saying, I think Luis Ortiz, who are right, man, I think against Wilder, both times he was winning the fight.
Definitely.
And both times he got stopped, I think, once in the 10th, once in the 7th. We looked at that earlier. Right, yeah. But I think he'd be good against a good match for Parker. Don't you think?
I like that fight. Especially this new, improved version of Parker that we saw against Chisora. That sharp version of him who's low in his stance, who's looking for uppercuts, who's reactive defensively. If you'd have asked me that 6 months ago, I would say Luis Ortiz would beat the fuck out of Parker, but I'm not so sure now. I think that's a really good fight.
So maybe he beats Parker. Luis, and then potentially if Joshua loses to Usyk, he get Parker Joshua 2. Depending on what happens with him and Usyk and where that goes ahead. But
it's great.
The heavyweight division's fucking really intriguing at the minute.
Stacked. It's good for us that I imagine AJ will lose that rematch against Usyk. And without the belts, he's got more incentive to fight people that he wouldn't have otherwise fought.
Exactly.
And we're gonna see a lot of good matchups, man. Mm. And the Parker-AJ rematch, does Parker win that? I'm not so sure.
Exactly. Now he's looking better. That's what adds to the intrigue.
I would still back AJ in that, but you might see AJ Ortiz if Ortiz wins that fight, which is something I'd be really intrigued by.
I'm still backing AJ against Usyk, you know.
Really?
I think he might pull something out.
Listen, I want him to.
Yeah, I really because want, I got, maybe I just want him to more than anything, but I think he might.
I want him to, but I also think Usyk is a box of tricks and you have to be perfect for 36 minutes to be not perfect.
I want Usyk to win. I actually do.
Fair play, yeah.
I just how impressed with what I was with him in that fight, and I just think, I think he's a better boxer.
He's the more skilled man, definitely.
Oh, he's definitely a technically better gifted boxer.
But if Joshua can pull out the bully power sort of moves, then you don't need to be that perfect. Look at Wilder's career.
I'd like to see AJ win because I want to see the trilogy, and I like seeing people learn from their mistakes and coming back against these. Like, imagine the pressure on AJ for every fight that he gets up for. It's pretty impressive.
I mean, he's already done it once against Andy Ruiz, but this is a different
definitely. There's completely. Not like there was a clear recipe, a path to success to beat Andy Ruiz. Just fucking stay out of the way, innit? You can't really do that against Usyk. He's quicker than you. His foot movement's better than you. His feints are better. He's seeing more steps ahead than you are. He's got a good chin.
And he doesn't hesitate. As well. You know what I mean? They're saying he's improving. Like, you know, it's hard to see how he comes back and wins it, but that'd be an intriguing fight.
Yeah, so, well, preview. How are we at an hour and a half already? Okay, so we'll preview next week, but there's not much going on. There's no boxing or UFC last weekend or next weekend. In the boxing, Callum Johnson challenges for Joe Smith Jr.'s light heavyweight title on the 15th of January, and we'll see Dana's Army back on the 22nd of January with Francis Ngannou versus Cyril Gane at UFC 270.
Gane wins up.
I think so, yeah. What was
apparently he fucking dropped him in sparring.
Yes,
there's a video of it.
Sparring story. Sparred together.
Yeah, they were at the same camp.
Oh, are they?
And they were saying that Ngannou cut blocked Gane to the UFC. They were like, "Who's this other heavyweight in your camp?" He's like, "Nah, he ain't that good, you know." So like, probably just sorry me, innit? I don't know. This is all gossip, innit? This is all gossip. But just a quick word on the general MMA coverage. I'm going to try and get back on the ONE Championship coverage, because they've got some immense fighters over there. Adriano Moraes, Rod Tang, Gary Tonin, Superman, OK Yoon, and Rainier DeRida, just to name some of their headliners.
Sounds like a South Korean like super band.
Let's fighting. But you've seen how some former UFC fighters like Eddie Alvarez, Sage Northcutt, and most surprisingly, Demetrius Johnson, and the way they've been dealt with over there. And there's no doubt that in the later weight classes at least, ONE Championship has a comparable roster to the UFC. They also have a wider umbrella of competitions featuring kickboxing, Muay Thai and grappling matches alongside MMA. I don't know why I stopped covering them, but I'm going to get back on it. If that means taking some time away from the UFC's undercards, then so be it. All that being said, ONE had nothing over the new year either, so nothing to report there. Their next show is the Heavy Hitters card on January 14th. Headlined by Zhang Jing Nan.
Good Chinese name.
Versus Ayaka Miura for the world...
Japanese name.
No, it is great. This is for the world strawweight...
Nailing the pronunciation.
This is for the world strawweight title and those precious Sino-Japanese prestige points.
Oh, I love the news of Sino.
Oh, that's going to go off as well, man. They absolutely hate each other. Low-key hate each other, Chinese and Japanese.
Beefs, man.
Anything low-key about it.
Second World War, man.
But also...
Rape them, Nanking.
But Bellator also had nothing over the New Year's, but they'll be back on January 29th with their 273 card, headlined by Ryan Bader versus Valentin Maldavsky for the heavyweight title. And here on the Jake Paul Sports Podcast, we aim to break the stranglehold Uncle Dana has had on MMA coverage that we produce under our own direction. So that's our mission statement for 2022, and I think that's it.
Tino's just unfollowed us. Now you've called us that.
Tino, don't do it. Let's fight, Tino.
That's you hate the geezer. But yeah, first one of the new year.
I loved it. I had a great time, guys.
Here's to a few more, mate.
Second time we're in the room together.
Cheers. I'm starting on the proper beers in a minute.
Jim's been drinking Cobras, but they're like soft drinks for Jim, innit?
Yeah. 4.5s, mate. I give them to me nipper. I put them in my dog's water, I do, mate. Just to see how he acts.
I'm in the dog bowl. Right, cheers. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everyone.